Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We're your host for this weekend's edition, also your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, Corlin Economics Report. On this weekend's show, we're going to be, as we usually do, jumping around to a few major sectors, but I am going to spend a bit more time chatting about the interest rate environment that we are seeing that really has moved. Probably one of the most aggressive moves we've seen in interest rates when you take percentage-wise moves. We are kicking off this show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Now, Jesse, as I mentioned, interest rates, they have been essentially screaming higher. Even early on this year, just for the first quarter, interest rates, the 10-year opened this year at about 1.5% and is already up over 2.6%. And we only have to go back to the beginning of last year, so 2021, interest rates, the 10-year, right around 1%. And throughout 2020, the 10-year went the whole way down to 0.5%. It's been a massive move higher in rates due to a number of different factors. But I need to ask you, Jesse, simply looking at the chart for rates, can they move much higher from here? Do we need a bit of a digestion phase?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're very close to a short-term top in interest rates, possibly. I've been honestly confused by the bond market recently, and I've kind of given up trying to analyze it because it's been so manipulated by central bank intervention. So, but when I just look at my normal indicators, we're seeing some short-term trend exhaustion signals on interest rates. So obviously, bond sentiment is just in the toilet. Daily DSI shows, very low percentage bulls. And then we're seeing, interest rates are typically very highly correlated with kind of the cyclical sectors within the stock market. And right now, those have been rolling over pretty hard while rates have been going higher. So to me, that's an important divergence. And it could be that rates are just kind of gotten a little bit ahead of themselves. But I would just make one point, which is we're bumping into, this is one of the most important charts that I've been looking at in the last several weeks, is the long term, I'm talking 30-year plus chart of, the 10-year yield and the 30-year yield. They're bumping up against their downtrend lines that literally go back to late 80s, early 90s. And so you have a 30-plus year downtrend that's now being tested. And, that's not just an important signal for whether the downtrend remains intact, but every time we've tested that downtrend, every time interest rates have risen significantly over a number of months, to where they bumped up against that, we've seen rising financial instability. So in 1987, rates popped up to the beginning of this trend, rates popped up. We had the 87 crash. In 2000, we had rates pop up from about 98 to, March of 2000. That obviously was the peak of the dot-com mania. Then, rates bumped up against that downtrend line again in 2006-07. That was the peak of the housing bubble. In 2011 was the next time rates bumped up against that downtrend line. We had this European sovereign debt crisis. And then in 2018, late 2017, early 2018, we had rates rising again fairly rapidly. And we had in early 2018, the Volmageddon episode where those short VIX ETFs blew up, one in particular. And then obviously later in the year, towards the end of 2018, we had a pretty steep stock market sell-off and the famous Powell pivot. Rates now have been rising much more rapidly than any of those previous periods. So I think we need to be on the lookout for some more, another episode of financial instability.
Well, Jesse, you bring up a good point there because a lot of people have noted that the bond market was overdone for decades. I mean, like for 40 years, it was a one-way ticket higher and higher and higher with some brief respites. But a couple of years ago, a lot of people thought, hey, this bond bubble, it can't keep going. And so when the Fed announced that they were going to start reducing their liquidity and their accommodative buying last year, and they were going to start tapering, a lot of people thought, well, who's going to buy those bonds? I think we've even asked you that question at the time, you know, maybe a year ago or 6 months ago, who is going to buy these bonds? And what we're seeing is, as the Fed has pulled their liquidity out of the marketplace, there isn't as many people buying these bonds, and therefore rates have gone higher. So some of this was telegraphed a year or two ago, that we knew rates couldn't have gotten lower than 0.4%. And now that we see rates screaming higher, isn't that just indicative of them pulling away the punch bowl and liquidity drying up? And we're seeing that, you know, across the board, not just in bonds, but also in the stock markets. There's a liquidity, you know, vacuum, and this is the result of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Fed has been, you know, depressing or suppressing interest rates, nominal interest rates, for, you know, well over a decade now, really since they embarked on, you know, QE back in 2008, 2009. And what we saw during the pandemic was by far the biggest intervention in the bond market that we've seen in generations, if not of all time. And so, yeah, now that they've said we're not going to be in the market buying, and the government is still issuing tons of debt to meet pretty massive still, you know, fiscal deficits. Yeah, there's a supply-demand mismatch. And it's actually just reset. You know, rates are probably back to where, you know, they should have been a couple of years ago. But I do think, you know, that's a really important question to ask. If the Fed is not going to be in the market, who's going to buy these bonds? And that's a question. I think if rates do continuing to power higher, you know, we will hear discussion of yield curve control again. You know, the Bank of Japan has been stepping into the markets again to pin longer term yields. And look at what the yen's done in response. It's, you know, it went into free fall. So I think that's something that we could look to, you know, in the future. But I think right now, markets are not pricing in rapidly rising recession risk. Certainly the bond market is not quite. I mean, with rates rising right now, we've seen the yield curve invert. I do think that's an effective recession signal. But with rates rising in the last few days, I think that's kind of goes against this idea that we're seeing rapidly rising recession probability.
So, Jesse, one other thing that everyone's looking at when it comes to yields is the yield curve. And the yield curve did just slightly invert earlier this week. It was, or at least the 2 and the 10-year, it dipped into slightly negative territory. And a lot of people point to an inversion of the yield curve, saying that about 6 to 18 months off, we usually do get a recession. The last time the yield curve just briefly inverted was back in 2019. And hey, strangely enough, we had the COVID pandemic shortly after. That one came a bit quicker in terms of that recession. But truly, when the yield curve has gone negative, back in 2006, 2007, we all know what happened in 2008 with the big recession. And then going back to about the year 2000, what do you need to see in terms of a yield curve inversion, in terms of time frame, in terms of depth of the inversion, that gives you the confidence even more so to say that this recession is coming and it'll be coming in 6 to 18 months?
Well, there's a number of indicators that I look at that are all, I mean, it's not just the yield curve, but I think the yield curve is an important one to just think about, right? And why is the yield curve such a good predictor of recession? I think there's two reasons. One is, why would essentially 2-year rates be the same as 10-year rates? So how is that possible in a market where the Fed has stepped away, right? The Fed has stepped away and is not intervening in the bond market anymore. So I think we can trust the signals today that we're getting, whereas we possibly couldn't have trusted them over the past, you know, 2 years, because they were intervening so significantly. But the only reason you get 10-year and 2-year yields at essentially the same rate, or 10-year lower than 2, is investors are really wanting to lock in an interest rate for as long as they possibly can. 10-year, 30-year bonds, they're willing to, and why would they be willing to or wanting to lock those in as long as they can? Well, they anticipate short-term rates are going to come back down again, right? And they don't want to buy a 2-year treasury and then have it mature in 2 years and say, oh, you know what, I can't reinvest these proceeds at 2.5% anymore. You know, I can only reinvest it at 0.5%. So what would make those 2-year yields come down? Well, that would be recession, you know, is really the only thing that would bring two-year rates back down from 2.5% of where they are today. So that's investors essentially telling you that they believe recession is likely, and that will prevent them from being able to reinvest short-term debt at the higher yields they're seeing today. The other side of that is, how do banks make money? Banks make money lending long and borrowing short. And so if you think about the credit cycle, right, when there's a good spread between short-term and long-term rates, that's basically a good potential for profit for banks. And so they're going to be very eager to go borrow short and lend long because it's very profitable for them to do so. When the yield curve inverts or at least just flattens, they have no incentive to go lend, right? I'm 2-year and 10-year money is the same. My spread is gone, so I'm going to tighten monetary or tighten credit conditions, and we're not going to be lending as much. And so the credit cycle goes along with that. So I think it's important to think about, this is not just a mechanical signal of recession. This is investors telling you recession is probably coming. The market's telling you recession is probably coming. You know, the credit cycle telling you that we've reached the end of this credit cycle, and that we're probably going into a period of tightening credit, goes right along with what the Fed is doing. So, I think that's an important thing to consider, that it's not just, hey, this mechanical thing, this indicator telling recession is coming. No, there's structural reasons as to why this indicator matters.
Well, Jesse, another thing that people point to as a indicator for a potential slowing down of growth and recession is higher energy prices. In fact, the energy price is doubling year over year. I mean, some could argue that we saw energy prices go negative just 2 years ago, and then they were kind of hovering in the 20 to 30 range. We're now over $100 a barrel in oil. So is that another indicator you're looking at, is what's happening in the energy market as a tax on everything from business to consumer?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from where I sit, the yield curve is just one of many indicators that are pointing to a high risk of recession over the next 12 to 18 months. Oil prices is one. In fact, when you look at together, actually, one of the indicators I use is just the average 12-month rise in the 10-year yield, in the oil price, and in the dollar. Because when those things are rising, it creates a headwind to the economy and a headwind to corporate profits. When those things are falling together, it's the reverse. It's a nice tailwind to profits in the economy. Well, for the last 2 years, and this operates with about a 2-year lead, for the last 2 years, we've obviously been seeing, since, you know, go back to the March 2020 lows, we had oil prices go negative, interest rates, I think the 10-year went down to about 50 basis points, and the dollar sold off pretty hard kind of in the wake of all those Fed stimulus measures. Since then, we've seen the dollar rise very strongly over the last year. Oil prices are up a ton, and interest rates have, gone from 50 basis points to 250 basis points on the 10-year. So all those things create a huge headwind to the economy and basically forecast a pretty steep earnings recession sometime over the next several quarters. But specifically to the oil price, I can't remember which firm it was. It was a brokerage firm put out a research piece recently showing that every time the oil price rises, the real price rises, that's oil price after inflation, more than 50% year over year, we've had a recession. And we've seen, obviously, oil prices rise much more than 50% after inflation. So yeah, so you have this confluence of factors. It's not just the bond market telling us, it's the dollar, it's oil prices. All these things are kind of conspiring now to point towards rising recessionary risks.
Jesse, how much of a factor did that whole reopen trade play in this general slowdown in GDP, in the increase in energy prices? There was this general boost, this general sugar high when the U.S. economy especially started to reopen. Numbers got better, especially economic numbers, and people were out there spending. Largely, I believe people have run out of that more free money that they got. And from what I've seen, credit card debt has started to rise again. What's the impact, carryover effect from that reopen trade that I think is largely behind us now?
Well, I absolutely agree with you. I think essentially what we've discovered with the inflation numbers and the economic numbers and all this stuff is that we way overstimulated, right? Printing $5, $6 trillion and putting it directly in the hands of consumers has created a huge surge in demand, which has led to a huge surge in inflation. And now that those things are being withdrawn, fiscal and monetary stimulus, now we're headed for a major hangover. And I would say you can just look to the stock market itself. And one of my favorite speeches Stan Druckenmiller gave was back in middle of 2019 when he said, the best economist he's ever seen is the inside of the stock market, not the stock market itself, but the inside. So the relative performance of cyclical sectors within the stock market, things like small caps, and they have a very high correlation to economic growth. You just look at the relative performance of small cap to large cap, and it's very highly correlated. It leads manufacturing activity by a number of months. And so when small caps are leading to the upside, it's a really good sign for the economy, and vice versa. We've seen small caps, lead to the downside stronger than any, even worse than they did in the COVID crash. So literally since, you have to go back to, 20 plus years to just before the dot-com bubble burst to see small cap relative performance any weaker than it has been recently. So that to me is a very strong sign. And then you have stocks like retail, home builders, transports. Most recently, the truckers have been absolutely annihilated in the last week or so. All this to me is the stock, the inside of the stock market telling you things are not as great as economists and their forecasts would suggest right now.
Well, Jesse, in light of this, where we're seeing so many sectors pulling back, we saw a lot of newly minted investors over the last 2 years jump into the markets, think they could only go one way, and they really got aggressive with a lot of the speculative side of things, from NFTs and cryptos to the growth and tech stocks. I just saw an article yesterday highlighting how the ARK Innovation Fund was one of the worst performing funds, not just at the fourth quarter, but also in the first quarter of this year. So we've seen a big shift from growth and that speculative fervor over into value. Will value continue to get the bid? Are people going to stay defensive? And where would you recommend investors go to kind of ride out the coming storm? If we're going to be facing a recession in a year, Will there be one more sugar high before that, or where are you going to park money in this kind of a macro backdrop?
Yeah, I think it's more important to understand what you want to avoid right now. I am still very bullish on commodities. I think we are in a secular bull market for commodities. Oil prices, the real oil price is still well below its highs from 10, 15 years ago. So, I do think those things can continue to move higher, but I'm glad you asked about the implications for the stock market, because it brings me to one other indicator that I've written extensively about, and that's just the insider sell to buy ratio. In March of 2020, we saw insider buying step up in a huge way. That was a very good predictor for the rally that we've seen. Najat Sehun, who's a University of Michigan business school professor, has quantified a lot of these things. And he shows when the insider sell to buy ratio gets really low, meaning there's a lot of buying relative to selling, it's very bullish for the stock market 12 to 24 months later, but it's also very bullish for the economy. It's not just a vote of confidence for the stock prices and valuations. It's a vote of confidence for the fundamentals, the earnings, and the direction of the economy. What we saw at the end of last year in November, December, was the sell to buy ratio went from under 10 in March of 2020 to well over 30 by the end of last year. And that's the highest we've seen in all the data that I have going back over a decade. So to me, that's a very clear sign, with insider selling far surpassing insider buying last year, that the next 12 to 24 months in the stock market is going to be rocky. And the economy, that's insiders telling you that fundamentals, right, earnings growth, these types of things are not going to be great over the next 12 to 24 months. And so I think you want to avoid, stocks generally. I think that the stocks that have benefited most from all of these dynamics, low inflation, a very activist Fed, I think you have to point to the biggest stocks in the NASDAQ. And when I look at these, the big five, I call them Manta, because you got Microsoft, Amazon, Nvidia, Tesla, and Apple, right? That's the big five right now in the NASDAQ. Put them all together, particular market cap, divide it by their total aggregate free cash flow, minus back out stock-based compensation. They're trading at 70 times cash flow right now. That's absolutely insane to me, that you're heading towards an earnings recession, probably, and probably an economic recession. And in the midst of this, the Fed is tightening monetary policy. They're more They've never been possibly further behind the curve than they are today, so they have to play catch up. You have Bill Dudley, former New York Fed chair, today saying, if stocks don't go down, the Fed has to force them down. And in the midst of all this, you have the top five biggest stocks in the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 trading at 70 times free cash flow. To me, that's what you want to avoid. You really need to stay away from these things that have gotten so obscenely overvalued.
All right, Jesse, we're going to wrap it up here. But look, those high-flying tech stocks, now there's even been maybe a slight change or at least an addition to that list. They carried the markets for a long period of time. And if sentiment does change that much on those stocks, then, well, you would have to think that markets would pull back. And where would that money rotate into? Who knows? Tough to say right now. But I do not disagree with you that markets are on way more shaky footing. And it's a number of factors, all considering what the U.S. and the world just went through in the last 2+ years. Jesse, thank you as always for your time, buddy. We'll chat again in a few weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. And yeah, looking forward to chatting with you again, buddy.
Thanks, gents. Always good talking to you guys.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.